Thank you for the invitation for me to come along to talk about the Chinese church. Actually, whenever I chatted with Lorraine earlier on, tonight you have not just one civil servant, you actually have two civil servants. I'm a civil servant. I work in the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Investment. So you get two for the price of one tonight. Okay. But as John mentioned earlier on, my role actually... I'm actually an elder of the Chinese church on a, essentially part-time, but maybe not part-time, because after all, being a Christian is a full-time, occupation. No matter what time of day it is, we are Christian. Once you are saved, you are saved. So, yes, I'm an elder of the church, not on a full-time basis, but of course working as a civil servant in my other job. whenever we think about the church, I was asked to talk about the Chinese church, there's so much I can talk about the Chinese church, because the Chinese church in Northern Ireland has been around for quite a number of years now. But for me, the key things concerning a church, regardless if it's a Baptist church or Chinese church, is really based on this Psalm 127, verse 1, which says that unless the Lord builds a house, his builder labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over a city, the watchman stand guard in vain. So regardless if it's a Chinese church, or Baptist church, or Presbyterian church, if the Lord is not the one who builds it, then the builders labor in vain. And they apply to the Chinese church as well. We've been around for a number of years. But no matter what I say about the church, or who was involved in it, or the background to it, I will tell you all that in a few moments' time. End of the day, we have to remember that it's the Lord God. He actually builds a church. So he's the one who sustains it. And if in future, one day, some future time, maybe the Lord will say, well, that's the end of that bit of work, then the Lord takes away. As Job says, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. May the name of the Lord be praised. But it's a lovely verse to start off with. Just before I talk about that, my name is Wai Kun Mo, as I mentioned earlier on. I'm an elder of the Chinese church. I came over in 1971. Just at the very beginning of the troubles, you know, maybe it's a distant memory now, you know, but the troubles, whenever I arrived here, I mean, I thought this is a permanent thing, you know, the bombs, bullets and so on. I thought it's something permanent that's been going on for years and years and years, you know, but 1971 came over. But if you think about the Chinese in the UK, you know, there hasn't been that many Chinese people in the UK. I was looking up some history about the Chinese in the UK. The first Chinese to arrive in the UK actually arrived around the 1800s to places like Liverpool, when of course UK was the world power then. Liverpool, Southampton were the main ports. In those days, of course, there were no planes, and the only way of travel was by boat, by ships. And so most of the Chinese people who came to the UK would go to Liverpool, maybe some to Southampton, and whenever they get there, they start to work. And in a lot of cases, a lot of these are seamen. You know, that's the only job they know. They left China, maybe on a boat, on a British boat, come to Liverpool and start to work on the seafaring trade. During the Second War, especially, a lot of Chinese people actually helped in the Second World War. And a lot of Chinese people died in the sea as well. But the thing is that after the Second World War, a lot of these Chinese seamen actually were sent back to China. You know, there's collusion between the British government and also the ship owners in those days. They thought, well, the war's ended, we don't need all these Chinese people, so get a law in place, send them all back home. That's what they did. You know, it may seem, wow, you know, can you do that? Well, what about human rights? It's so much harder to send people home nowadays. But in those days, it's easy, change the law. And so a lot of Chinese people who came to the UK, they actually married local white people, had children here in Liverpool and other places. All of them were sent back on boats, given an ultimatum. We will give you a one-way ticket back, or else. So a lot of them went back. It's bad timing as well, because in 1949, of course, communism came into China. And so anyone who actually went back after the Second World War basically was stuck in China almost permanently. Around that time, 1948, there was a pastor, Stephen Wong, from China. He came to UK to study. He was a pastor. He wanted to study for 1 year. So he came over in 1948. And it just so happened, just whenever he was about to finish, the communists then took over China. And because the communists took over China, a lot of the communists, obviously, they were attacking people who were rich, who were educated. And Stephen, Pastor Stephen Wong, knew that if he was to go back to China, he would either not survive or he would be in a very delicate or bad situation. So he decided to stay in the UK. He was allowed to stay in the UK. And he felt that, you know, Lord, he prayed to God, why am I stuck here in the UK? Why can't I go back to China? And the Lord basically told him that you have a big field here to work in. So Pastor Stephen Wong then settled in the UK, and he opened up a church called the Chinese Church in London in the 1950s, 1960s. And he also set up an organization called the Chinese Overseas Christian Mission, a COCM for short. So basically, he started this mission. Because he could not go back to China. And as far as I know now, Stephen Wong never went back to China. He never had the opportunity to do that. He had a wife. He had a family in China, and he never saw them. Okay, he died in 1971 in the UK because of the communist takeover. He wasn't able to go back or see his family. But obviously, Stephen Wong was a Christian. His family was a Christian. I'm sure they're together now in heaven. So, what were the Chinese in Northern Ireland? Well, the Chinese actually didn't really come to Northern Ireland until about the 1960s. I don't know why. Maybe it's because there wasn't the troubles in those days. I don't know, because maybe opportunities were in the UK. Ireland, after all, you know, had its own country. It became separate. And maybe UK was more prosperous. And most people go to UK. London, there's a Chinatown there. Manchester, there's a Chinatown there. Liverpool, there's a big community of people there. So a lot of Chinese people then went over to the UK first. And then some of them started to come over in drips and drabs. I don't know if you know Belfast that well. Some of you maybe are from Belfast, okay? I've been in Belfast since 1971, and I've got an accent to go with it as well. So if I came over in 1971, there's only about 3 or 4 Chinese restaurants in Belfast, okay? Those restaurants, like the Peacock restaurant on Queen Street, there's a Blue Sky thing on Royal Avenue, there's one on the North Road, North Street as well. Some of you are nodding your head, you know those restaurants, okay? I only hear about them, you know, those are days before my time, okay? I'm not showing my age. But a lot of those people who came over were actually from the rural area of Hong Kong. Hong Kong, when you see the lovely picture of Hong Kong, you see all these lovely buildings. That's actually taken from the mainland side to the island. Okay, Hong Kong is an island plus a bit of mainland China. And whenever you see the lovely photos of Hong Kong, it's actually the island of Hong Kong. All those beautiful places. But on this side, there's some cities. There's a city called Kowloon. But beyond that, it's a rural area where there are villages. And in the 1960s, 1950s, 1960s, it's a very, very poor area, okay? And my parents were living in those areas, and other people in those areas, and their main language is called Hakka, okay? You always hear about Cantonese, but Hakka is the other main language in Hong Kong. So these rural people, they were quite poor, had to look for a living, and so some of them decided, why don't we go to the UK and start living there, you know? And the only thing they can do is cook. You know, this is a saying in Hong Kong, with Chinese people, not just Hong Kong, anything with 4 feet, they can cook it. So these Chinese people thought, we'll go to the UK and we start cooking things. And of course, lots of people then start, what kind of food am I eating here? You know, all these conspiracy theories about what goes on in the back of the Chinese takeaway restaurants. But I can assure you, they all give food, okay? But anyway, a lot of these Hakka-speaking people, you know, it's a dialect of Chinese. And they came over in the 1960s, and then in the 1970s, some of the families followed. I myself is one of those. My parents came over. They came to Southampton first, went to Southampton. They worked for a number of years. Went there in the 1960s. And then in 1969, they came to Northern Ireland, in Belfast. They started working in the catering trade, working as chefs and waitresses and so on. And then once they settled, they bought a house, and then they thought, right, it's time to bring our kids over. And so myself and my sister came over in 1971 to join them, and we've settled there ever since. And there's other families following the same path, you know. All these Hakka people from the rural area, they settled here, they sent money back to Hong Kong for the kids' education, Once they sort of got settled, they tell them to come over. And other people will say, oh, hold on, you know, there's something going on here. We can also do the same. And so lots of people from the rural area of Hong Kong follow the same path, came to Northern Ireland. And so lots of people in Northern Ireland in those days spoke the language of Hakka, okay, not Cantonese. Hakka was the main language. But then, of course, the troubles limited the numbers. I remember in 1987, even up to 87, okay, still in the midst of troubles, okay, I remember going to England for a Christian conference. It's funny, but it is true. I chatted to them. First of all, they laugh at me because of my Irish accent, okay? Then secondly, they said, do you actually have to go around in bulletproof vests and put your helmets on when you walk down the street? They were serious. They actually thought that when you go down the street in Belfast, you could be shot on the spot. So it's like a war song, you know, all they hear from Belfast is bullets, bombs, and so on. So they thought, you know, that's why they actually, when we invite them, why don't you come to Belfast? They said, no way. A lot of them were really, really afraid. That was in 1987, okay? I mean, the trouble's been on for a number of years, and that's what's happening. But anyway, I'll just go on here. The Chinese started settle in the 1960s, a lot of Hakka people. But then a man called Ronnie McCracken, some of you may know Ronnie, don't you? Some of you know he does a lot of work amongst the Israel people, among the Russian, Romanians. He does a lot of charity work. And anyway, Ronnie McCracken in the 1970s, did I bring the other document with me? Well, I've got it here, yep. In the 1970s, he had a heart for Chinese. Even before then, he had a heart for Chinese people. He saw these restaurants opening up in the North Street, in the Queen Street, and he thought, I wish I could reach out to those people. You know, he had a heart to reach out to the Chinese. He knew the Chinese people didn't really speak English, and a lot of my parents, they actually, even now, their English is fairly limited. So he wanted to reach out to them. But being a white person, obviously, if he goes to their restaurant, you know, he can't really talk to those people. Those waiters, the only thing they know is, what number do you want? Number 6 plus fried rice. That's all they know, okay? That's the only language. That's the only language they're limited to. So he thought, there must be somebody to reach out to them. So he actually wrote, I was talking about COCM earlier on. By this time, the pastor, Stephen Wong, had died, but he has passed on the work to another lady called Mary Wong. Now, Mary Wong is not related to Stephen, same surname. But she took on the work, and he wrote to Mary and said, listen, there's lots of Chinese people here. Why don't you come over and reach out to these Chinese people? And at that time, Mary Wong, who looked after COCM, said, they were looking after so many other fellowships in the UK, they don't have time. But Ronnie McCracken insisted, he kept on writing to them, insisting, and up to a point, and this is, and I quote, okay, from Ronnie McCracken. Ronnie McCracken actually wrote an article on this incident, and this is what he says here. This is in COCM. This is what Ronnie wrote. One morning at a prayer meeting, Mary read my letter to those gathered in COCM. Among them was a young student from Bradford called Naibob Cham. He was touched by the letter and said, if that Irish man is so burdened for our Chinese people that he is ready to pay our travel and living expenses, the least we can do is to help him, even if we will be martyrs. So that's what they thought. If you come to Northern Ireland, you could die, okay, because of the bombs and bullets. So, and they were serious about that. So anyway, the political troubles in Ulster were at the height, and the news of bombs and killings made the young Chinese people think they could be killed for their faith. Surprisingly, enough 4 other lads volunteered, okay, four other people volunteered to go along as well to join the team. They decided they would come over. The names were John Hung, Pak Hung Yap, Lee Hong Chow, and Paul Chan. On April the 1st, I went to the British Airways office in Wellington Place, this is Ronnie McCracken, to purchase the flight ticket for the boys to come over to Northern Ireland. I asked the salesman if I could purchase the tickets here and they could collect them in London because they had to fly over from London to Belfast. The salesman said, no problem, just give me the names. Okay, so Ronnie took a deep breath and started Naibob Cham. Okay, after a few goes, the salesman got down on the computer terminal. He was able to type it in after a few goes. And the next name was Pak Hung Yap. He asked me in amazement and said, there's no one in the world called Yap. His wife will be called Mrs. Yap. I get this. Today's April the 1st is an April Fool joke. So this is what the salesman thought it was. It's a joke because it's April the 1st. It was, after all, April the 1st. I assured him there's no joke and bravely carried on. When I came to John Hung, he suggested that perhaps they all should be hung. Okay? So that's the difficulty Ronnie had in bringing the people over. But praise the Lord, he was able to bring them over. In 1975, around Easter time, the people came over and they had the first meeting. But it wasn't easy because a lot of those people were working in restaurants, and some of them were Christians. But because some of them are Christians, Ronnie thought maybe we could invite them to churches. But the difficulty was language. These people could not integrate. They could attend a church, but they just wouldn't understand what's being said. And so Ronnie McCracken decided, right, what we need to do is to have our own Bible study groups and our own fellowship. And so basically the Chinese Christian Fellowship, which is a BCCF, okay, the Belfast Chinese Christian Fellowship, was formed to cater for those restaurant people. But then through the next 10, 15 years, instead of restaurant people, more and more of the people who went were students. In those days, don't forget, Hong Kong was a British colony. So a lot of people from Hong Kong would come to UK as a first choice of a study. So if they came to Hong Kong, they appeal from Malaysia, they appeal from Singapore as well. And they met at this place called the Methodist Chaplaincy on Emerald Avenue, right beside Queen's, right opposite Queen's University. They have a small room upstairs, caters for about 20, 30 people, and they met there every Sunday afternoon. But the thing is this, was that the numbers of on and off, okay, lots of students from Hong Kong, on and off. But the thing is that because they're students, during the summertime, a lot of students will have gone back home to Hong Kong, and there are very few people there. I myself went to a local church, first of all, and then I joined the fellowship in 1987. And I remember, I actually joined it in around April, May time, 1987. I remember the summer of that 1987, okay, this was July 1987. One of the meetings, I was there, there's only four of us, okay, in the fellowship. This is a Chinese fellowship with Christians, trying to reach out to Christians. There are only four of us. That's how small it was in those days, okay? But by the grace of God, in September 1987, suddenly a lot of medical students arrived. They're from Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia. A number of them arrived. There's about 8 or 9 of them. And you know medical school is about 7 years in length, okay? So all these were Christians. So basically, we have a group of Christians who'll be here for the next 7 years, and they became the foundation of the fellowship. And basically, from that point onwards, the fellowship started to expand. And it got so big that we actually had to move to Windsor Baptist Church in June 1988. Early on, John mentioned to me that on your committee, you've got Dorothy McMillan. Is it McMillan or McMillan? McMillan? Yeah. Windsor Baptist Church has been very great to us because they saw our needs around 1987, and they said, your fellowship is starting to get big now, there's more and more people meeting, you know, why don't you come to our church and meet in our place in there? We have got a big hall, you can use it on a Sunday afternoon. And so we took up the offer. In those days, it was a step of faith because our numbers were still about 20, 30 people. And we thought, if we go to this Windsor Baptist Church, they have this big hall, and we've got just 20, 30 people sitting there, it seems a wee bit too big for us, you know. But we decided we'd take the step of faith. And praise the Lord, we took that step of faith. The numbers started to increase as well. So it's great for us. And so the fellowship started to expand more and more. Now, because the numbers increased, and also, apart from the Hakka people who came, these students from Hong Kong were Cantonese speaking as well. And then we were able to reach out to some of the restaurant people. So we said to ourselves, look, we still call ourselves a fellowship. What we need to do is become a church, an official church, you know, a registered charity. So really look into that. And around that time, and even now and again, some people ask us this question, and it's a very good question. Why do you need a Chinese fellowship? Why do you need a church? You know, after all, there's so many local churches here. There's lots of Baptist churches, you know, lots of Elam churches, lots of Presbyterian churches, you know, in Northern Ireland, in Ireland. So why don't people go to those? And that question is often asked. And the main reason is this, is that we are able to speak the language, okay? They may be there are lots of restaurant workers here. They speak Hakka. They speak Cantonese. But if you bring them into a Western church, will they be able to understand? No. And just like Ronnie himself, if he was to go into a Chinese takeaway or restaurant, they would basically want to know what order he wants. But whereas if a Chinese person walks into a takeaway or restaurant, they can communicate in their own language, and the counter door opens, and we can walk right in, straight in the kitchen, and able to chat to those people. That's why we need the Chinese church, Chinese fellowship. Yes, we can encourage them to go to local churches if they speak English. Brilliant. But from quite a number of people in Northern Ireland, Chinese people in Northern Ireland, their main language is really Hakka and Cantonese in those days. So that is why we need a Chinese fellowship or Chinese church. So we thought about becoming registered ourselves as a church. And on the 3rd of November 1996, we got a registration through the Inland Revenue. Obviously, many of you know, Northern Ireland at that time, they didn't have its own charity commission. And so we had to go through Inland Revenue in the UK, register ourselves for charitable purposes. So we became a church officially on the 3rd of November 1996. Now, the BCCC, the Belfast Chinese Christian Church, make up at that time, okay? I'll just go back to that in a few minutes. But after we became a church, we thought also, Windsor has been great. They've loaned us this place to meet every Sunday. But because we're getting bigger and bigger, we actually needed other meetings. For example, Chinese New Year celebrations, where can we hold it? Christmas Day celebration, we can't really hold it. After all, Windsor Baptist Church, we have their own Christmas Day celebration. And many other events as well. So we thought we need somewhere we can call home. Somewhere we can say, this is a Chinese church. And so we started to look around. And just at that time, Osterfield Presbyterian Church, they had the main church on the Lisburn Road. But they also had the old main hall just off Lawn Street, off the Lisburn Road, not so far away. And their youth work, the Boys Brigade work was going down in numbers, and so they wanted to sell the church halls. And they knew about a fellowship, and they knew we were looking for a place, and they actually offered it to us, first, rather than offering it to a developer, because they knew that, because they wanted the Christian work to continue in the area. So they offered the church to us, and they told us the cost was £180,000. We nearly fell off our chairs whenever they said that to us, because we were only a small fellowship, students, maybe a few restaurant workers here and there. But we thought it's God's guidance, and so we just went ahead anyway. And step of faith, we'll go for a bank loan, but we also make sure everyone gives into the fund to raise enough money for the church. And so on the 12th of November 1998, we purchased the church hall. Fantastic day that was, whenever we got it. But if you compare the makeup of the church, okay, in 1988, the dark blue area, think of the circle as the number of people in the church, okay? The total number of people in the church. The dark blue area are students, and the green area are others. Like myself, I was working already in those days. I'm not a student, but I was English speaking. But most other people with me in the fellowship at that time were from Hong Kong, Malaysia, and so on. They were students. But by 1996, the proportion has changed. Majority of people, or the most of them, more than 60-70% of the people were actually restaurant workers, and the rest were students or English speaking. That's within less than 10 years. So we are reaching out more to restaurant workers, so the church was being more established, and that is why we need our own building, because we no longer can have a small fellowship with so many people coming to a church. So, just to move on a little bit more, after buying the building, we continue to move on. But if you look back, I just go back, just before I say something here. You see here the number of people, okay? In the 1960s, I would say most of the Chinese people came from the rural area of Hong Kong, because Hong Kong was a British colony. So most of the people spoke Hakka. In the 1970s, myself, all the younger children, came to join the parents. We spoke Hakka, but we also spoke Cantonese, because then Hong Kong, lots of rural people moved into the cities as well. And then other people, Cantonese people, started to come to the UK as well to say, hold on, we can also get in the catering trade as well. We also can cook. So 1970s, Hakka and Cantonese people came along. And then in the 1980s, a lot of the Hakka people have stopped coming, because after all, the Hakka people were the poorer people in the past. But now, the generation has moved on, the younger children has got better education, better work. And so those ones were Cantonese-speaking people. They came in the 1980s. So the Hakka people is an older generation of people now. So 1980s, most of the Cantonese. And then the 2000, big sea change. Most of the people that came over actually started to be Mandarin people, okay? Mandarin is the main language of China. China was a closed country, but in the mid-1990s, they started to open up to let people out, okay, of China. And at the same time, lots of people started to obviously escape from China because of communism, and also they want to seek better life elsewhere. And a lot of them actually traveled to UK to seek asylum. Okay, quite a number actually came to Ireland, and maybe you can guess why they came to Ireland. No, can you guess why they actually came to Ireland in particular? Because in those days, if you have a child born in Ireland, what happens? The child has an automatic right of citizenship in Ireland. So a lot of people who came to UK, who got on board ships, planes, false passport, whatever, got to UK, the first thing they do is get a boat, get on a bus, get on a boat, come to Ireland, either get married or have a child in one of the hospitals here in the Northern Ireland, and those children will have automatic Irish citizenship. And lots of people follow that path, but the law was changed in the late 2000s, and that has stopped now. But in Northern Ireland especially, you get a lot of Mandarin-speaking Chinese people here now. Now, not all of them are asylum seekers, obviously. Okay, they're students as well now. But a number of them actually came this way, and a lot of them came over and they got asylum and they've settled here. They now have kids, and a number of them actually come to a Chinese church as well. So from the 2000 onwards, you've got Mandarin people. And you may not know this. Whenever my dad was here in the 1960s, a lot of the restaurants and takeaways would have been manned by people who spoke Hakka. In the 1970s, 80s, Cantonese people came over and took over a number of those shops. Okay, like my parents, they work in the catering trade. They're retired now, they're in the 70s. They retired about 20 years ago. They shut up shop, they retire. And the Cantonese people took over some of the shops. They started working it. But when the Mandarin people came along, the Cantonese people, their generation started to pass on as well. They're getting older and so on. And these Mandarin people actually started to take over the shops now. And so you may not know this, but if you go into a Chinese takeaway now, more than likely, the people in there would be from China, not from Hong Kong, okay? Not all of them. I remember 1971, I was very young then, walked down the street, and if you see a Chinese person, you actually go and chat to them. You know, because in Northern Ireland, you don't really see many Chinese people. It's great to see someone your own kind. And if you go to a Chinese supermarket, you hear your own Hakka language being spoken. In the 1980s, if I go to Chinese supermarket, I hear Cantonese being spoken, not much Hakka anymore, because the older generations moved on a bit. But now if I go to a Chinese supermarket, I don't understand what they're saying, because they all speak Mandarin. You know, and the girl at the till say, you know, talk to me in Mandarin. I just look at her, feel a bit embarrassed. My wife can speak all four dialects, but I certainly speak Cantonese and Hakka and English. So, but that's a sea change now, you know. In a funny way, whenever I came over here to join my parents, I helped in the Chinese takeaway in the restaurant when I was younger. When I was 15, 16, I used to go on weekends to help my parents in their restaurants. But now the newer generation of Chinese people, Mandarin-speaking people, are doing something similar. They're young kids, you can see them now. Once they get to about 12, 13, 14, they will start to help their parents. It's just a full circle again. You know, the circle repeating itself, this time with Mandarin-speaking people. I'll just move on very quickly here. Year 2000, in our church, the red bit is the Mandarin-speaking people, okay? The green bit will be Cantonese. By the way, this is not exact science, okay? Don't take this as a definitive definition of everything in Northern Ireland, okay? But this is a rough guide. The English section, less than a quarter. The red section is Mandarin, about 10% or so, 10-15%. But the other one, the green bit, is Cantonese. But the 2014 today, the green bit is the same as the red bit. You have the same number of people in the Mandarin side now as the same number of people in the Cantonese side in the church services. We have a church service in the morning, Sunday morning, and they all Mandarin. There's about 100 Mandarin-speaking people there, and about 20, 30 of them are young children. Brilliant. And in the afternoon, you've got the Cantonese service, and you've got 100 people, roughly about 100 people there, and most of them would be Hakka Cantonese people, but a big proportion of them would be the older generation. The Mandarin generation would be much younger people, students as well. And the English side, same numbers, it doesn't move that much. There's not too many of me about. The reason is simple, is this. The reason is simple. I speak English, yeah? In a way, if I didn't belong to Chinese church, I could just walk into any other church. I could go to Windsor Baptist Church. I understand English. I could go to another church. So that's why the English side is always going to be a bit smaller, okay? And the only reason I go there is because I just feel that I need to have my Chinese identity. And I also work amongst the Chinese people as well. And this is, in a sense, it's almost like my family. Yes, I'm in Northern Ireland now. I'm a British citizen. But yet, I'm still Chinese. And it's good. I'm able to still mix up with my kind in Christian worship together, praising the Lord together, here in Belfast, Northern Ireland, here in the UK. Some pictures of the English language service. This was taken last Sunday. We have about 30, 35, sometimes 40 people in the English service on the Monday morning. At the same time, in the main hall, we have the Mandarin service, Mandarin language, okay, that goes on, okay. That's the Mandarin service, and there's about 100 of them. And then the Cantonese in the afternoon, this is after the service, and there's also 100 of them as well. That goes, it's lovely to be able to have up to 250 Chinese people meeting on a Sunday to praise the Lord together in their own dialects. The older generation, Hakka, they're all moving on. You know, most of them are moving on now. A lot of the Cantonese people now are middle-aged people. Our church needs to cater for all these groups. Okay? We can't just say because they're older than Hakka, we sort of put them aside. These are about 70, 80 years old young people. I'll say young people. They're young. People in our church, we need to cater for them in our church. We also need to cater for the middle-aged Cantonese-speaking people. They're in the church as well. But then we've got the younger Mandarin people. You're here in the 20s, 30s, who came over, who are working in the catering trade now. We need to cater for them as well. Then we've got the English-speaking youth, you know, the children of people born in the church. My kids, you know. Rebecca's 23 now. She's older now. She's just qualified as a doctor there. I have a son studying in Liverpool. He's studying pharmacy. When they come back, you know, who's going to cater for them? Yes, they can go to the local church, but can the Chinese church cater for them? I've got another younger son who's 15 years old, and there's other young kids as well, people of from Cantonese families. During the year 2000, during the millennium, we had 30 millennium babies. I don't know if it's deliberate or what happened, but I mean, all these now, they're about 30, they're coming into youth, we have to cater for them. But what about the even younger ones now? All these young kids, 20 or 30 of them from the Mandarin side. In a few years' time, they'll be growing older. Their main language will be English, but they all speak Mandarin. And our church will need to cater for them as well. So lots of things our church needs to cater for. And so, I mean, we have a plan, hopefully, to cater for them. But at the same time, our church, I saw your picture earlier on of our church, but it's also quite an old church building as well. So our plan is, hopefully, to knock down parts of it and to rebuild it. So that maybe we can have three church services at the same time. The problem at the moment is that we've got three church services. The children of the Cantonese side who meet in the afternoon can't come in the morning. Why? Because their parents don't come to church until the afternoon, so they don't get a lift to come to morning service, English service. Okay? But if the Cantonese service, the Mandarin service, and the English service are all at the same time, then the whole family of all the Chinese people can come at the same time and join the church services, and then you can have a youth group meeting maybe afterwards. So that's why we want maybe to redevelop building, have all these new facilities to do that. So that's basically it. A bit of history of the Chinese church, and hopefully as well a bit of looking at the future as well. And feel free, if you have any questions after this meeting, just feel free to ask. I'll be very happy to take any questions later on.